Welcome to the Fantasy Alarm PGA DFS podcast. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. Joining me, as always, Mr. Donald Remington. Ram, how we doing, my man?
Doing pretty good. Just carrying on here. It was a pretty gruesome week last week.
Again.
I made it out alive. It was but general consensus throughout the DFS industry, it was as we were just discussing, a 5 of 6 type week. You could firmly cash with a 5 out of 6, and that seems to be a trend these days.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, these courses are pretty choppy that we've been at the last few weeks. Rick Gaiman, he puts out a tweet every week after the tournament what the optimal lineup was and how much salary was left on the table, and it's been a crazy amount the last few weeks. It's something you would never conceivably leave on the table.
Yeah, and I would tend to guess this week will probably look pretty similar, given the course, the tournament, and the field, and just the general like PGA season and the cut line, and really everything. It all kind of, it's like the perfect storm of like kind of leave some salary on the table and get a little crazy.
Yeah, definitely going to focus on ownership this week. We'll get into why in a little bit, but we're at the Detroit Golf Club for the Rocket Mortgage Classic for the second year of its existence. So not a lot to go on. Give us a little bit about the course, Alex, and what we're looking for this week.
Yeah, so like I just said, this is now the second year of the tournament here in Detroit, at Detroit Golf Club. So pretty limited information overall, but it's a Donald Ross design, which you do see on tour quite a bit. It's kind of, to me, so the Tour Championship at East Lake, Wyndham in North Carolina, which is something we see pretty much every year. There are some comps that you could go back and look at, but it is going to be also tough with the field that we have this week. So we got 1 year to go off of in terms of course history. 7,300 yards, par 72. So we're moving up in distance from the past couple weeks. We're coming off of two pretty short courses overall, but they played very differently. This is kind of standard tree-lined, deep rough. I have noted from last year, a lot of sand. So it's kind of one of those weeks where I think like 7,300 yards, you're not necessarily like, you don't need a Bryson DeChambeau it off the tee to be successful here. If you look at last year, it was kind of a mixture up top. Some lesser known names at the time, like Nate Lashley, who won, and then Doc Redman, who was runner up after Monday qualifying. That was probably kind of like most people's introduction to him, and he's done very well since. So it's kind of anyone's game in my eyes this week, and it should make for some interesting DFS plays in terms of just the weak field and the so much unknown, really.
Yep, yeah, it's going to be interesting if it plays the same. I mean, my overall impression from last year was that it was kind of a bomb and gouge type course, pretty straight, and then you just had to catch fire with the putter, and that's always a fun thing to try to predict.
Yeah, it's like putting outright on Kevin Na, because if he gets hot with the putter, he'll probably win. He did not play here last year, but, you know, it's interesting.
He definitely has the game to fit it. We'll get to him. But diving in at the top, you got Bryson DeChambeau, 11-7, Webb Simpson, 11. Those are the two most expensive golfers. And then some names we're not used to seeing kind of in that you know, the 10-plus range, Tyrrell Hatton, Patrick Reed, Hideki Matsuyama, Victor Hovland.
It's a new age of honestly, everything just feels different right now. Like the names, you're like, we are in this new weird in-between year where we're looking at Bryson, Webb, Patrick Reed, Victor Hovland, Sung J.M. as like studs. I know it's like because of this field, but like Bryson and Webb have been like staples of the last 3 weeks, which is, it's going to take some getting used to, I guess. But like, I guess it also depends just like how much are we buying in on like these guys staying around at the top as long as possible. I know I've always been bullish on kind of like those top two names there, but again, Bryson just keeps firing off top tens, which is crazy. Yeah. It's funny because it's like his game almost, he's just quietly fizzling out on Sunday almost, but then you realize that he finished T6, T8, T3.
Right.
And clearly he's doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, we've talked about that in the past where guys get that rap of, you know, not being able to close the deal, but it's because they're in so many tournaments and they've got so many opportunities where, you know, they get the chance to crap the bed much more than everybody else.
Yeah, and like it's golf, and these leaderboards have been packed heading into Sunday. Like, there is no, we haven't seen in seemingly forever like a Sunday where you're basically left with one or two guys. Like, you're able to place outrights on Saturday night the past couple weeks and get very legitimate, viable options at 30, 40, 50 to 1 who are like 4 or 5 strokes out. I think the past couple weeks you had like a large handful of people within 6 strokes, a smaller handful, but like still significant within 3 strokes. So like,
yeah, and you mean, just got to make sure you you check to see what the Ander curse is being put on, because poor Brendan Todd got it last week, and it was all but done before he'd even taken a single swing on Sunday.
Yeah, that was a rough Sunday for him, and it was like there had been some DJ chatter in the Twitter sphere at least pre-tournament, which got me thinking. As much as I hate to like take anything too seriously that I read on Twitter, it got me thinking about like DJ, just what he's been doing, and just the fact that he was kind of due for a win like that. I think he said it himself. Yeah. And I just felt heading into Sunday, it was like, this is DJ's.
Yeah. DK was offering a odds boost of to plus 400 for either of those guys. And I was like, oh, well, I think it's free money on DJ after seeing the Ender curse.
Yeah, as but much as I would have liked to see
to these prices. Are you going to play one of the big guys, or do you think you're going to start more down at like the Patrick Reed price, the Hovland price, Decky, and the low tens?
I prefer to probably start there in the low tens and just get creative. But with that said, you are also, like, this field thins out so quick, salaries are actually dropping pretty quickly. And if you want to put either Bryson or Webb in there, you totally can. And then Tyrrell Hatton, who, I mean, he's a pretty consistent player. And just his iron game in general and his ability to more or less keep it straight and hit fairways, it makes me like him, and it like the 10-7 price actually looks nice here, but just seeing him in like the top three in salary in this field is kind of crazy. So it doesn't feel right, but I think you can definitely move straight on down. There are some, I would say, good options to come in the next 10-15 names.
Yeah, that's kind of where I like to build, especially in these kind of weeks where I'd rather put the salary into a couple of that second tier range of golfers than, you know, roster Webb and then go from there. And if we're talking ownerships too, you know, Bryson and Webb are going to be really high owned, even though they're the most expensive golfers. It's just, you feel like you got to put your money somewhere, and that's going to be what a lot of people do. But kicks off with Sung J.M., 9,800, Ricky Fowler, Tony Finau, Bubba Watson, the aforementioned Kevin Na, and then closes with Scottie Scheffler. I think Na had a good week last week, and that means people are going to play him, which means you don't play him. It's just a seesaw, you know. You only use Na low owned.
It really is a seesaw, and that can go for a lot in the PGA DFS world. I think you could say that about, and it's kind of like my mind, honestly, week to week. It's a seesaw. I tilt back and forth, and I definitely do have some guys that are right in the middle that are sort of staples for me. One being Patrick Reed, which, I mean, I put him at the same tier as Bryson right now. Less talked about, definitely, as you could say about literally every single person we're going to see this week. But he's right there all the time. He doesn't miss a lot of cuts. He makes birdies. And I don't know if this is like the type of tournament I necessarily see him winning. I would kind of love to see it this week. And he did play here and finished T5 last year. So he's in consideration for me. But in terms of the seesaw effect, I would agree with you on Kevin Na fading him. I am going to kind of break the rule with Bubba there, who I was bullish on last week, which is, I know, not like the hottest take in the world, but he did not make the cut. And him and a couple others just seemingly crumbled on Friday morning, seemed to like really just be a disaster for a few guys. And then the cut line does its normal Friday afternoon couple ticks, and everyone freaks out, and then we're stuck with, you know, a bunch of 5 of 6s and 4 of 6s and a bunch of pent up anger.
Yeah, like Finau right above Bubba could be 10% higher owned, and I mean they've got pretty much the same skill set, and Bubba's got a little bit of experience on him, so if you let Bubba overpower a course, he can put up some numbers.
Yeah, definitely. If I were to go down a little bit from there, actually, I mean, you gotta mention Ricky here. He's just done very little as of late, but man, it's weird. It's weird talking about just like Ricky Fowler in general, because as soon as you think he's gonna like fizzle out, and you're like, what's up with him? Like, I thought he was one of the best golfers in the world. He will either finished in solo second or randomly win an event. Is he due to have an actual good tournament? This is another one of those sponsored events, Ricky and his Rocket Mortgage stuff. So you can take whatever you want from that, but you got to mention him here. I'm like, I always say, I'll have a piece of him because he's Ricky Fowler, and I just always do. And you're getting great ownership on him these days.
Yeah, and then I think M is a really nice play. I mean, it's just going to be a course that you can grind birdies on, and that's his MO. He's going to do that for 4 straight days and probably be in it at the end on Sunday.
I agree. I like the distance. He can, like, I want him more at a course like this. Grind birdies, distance helps, and I mean, he's also just a cut maker in general, and yeah, I mean, 6 of 6 is the name of the game these days. If you get 6 out of 6 this week, you're going to be pretty happy on Saturday morning, I'm thinking, and then probably pretty happy Sunday afternoon, too.
Yes, sir. Let's go down into the 8s. You mentioned Doc Redman. He's trending to be a really popular golfer at 8,500. Give us a little breakdown on Doc.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find anything really you don't like about playing him this week other than the ownership aspect, because like I love to see the trending upwards. I like to see, normally it's interesting to look at, like, if you look at who won this event last year when we have course history to look at. If you go to, say, Bubba Watson last week and you're like, all right, so he won, what did he do here the prior 2 years? And like, sometimes you see like a very clear trend of like them just performing better at an event. And then you can also just go back and look at clearly, very, very clearly recent history where Doc Redman has finished T62, T58, T21, T11 in his last four events. And then he finished in solo second here last year. Like, that's just like trends that are like, whoa, this is almost too good to be true. You couple in that ownership with me and it kind of honestly scares me. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, in this kind of a field, like, it does feel, since it's so concentrated, that you can get a leg up by fading it. But like you said, it's the pricing drops really quick. You know, you go another $500 to $1,000 of salary down, and you're like, no, I don't know that I want to play any of these people.
Yeah, it definitely gets like, once you start looking down a little lower, you're going to realize that, like, okay, well, that's just more of a reason I want to play him. Someone I kind of just want to go back to the well on is JT Poston, because he was right there on Friday with a couple of the others that I was referring to who seemed to just like put up one double right when it looked like they were in a comfortable spot to make the weekend, and then like try to finish out and just not quite enough to make it. And he was trending pretty well, so I don't think he played like very bad by any means last week. Mm-hmm. And he missed the cut, but prior to that, he finished T10 and T8 at the Charles Schwab and the RBC. So I like that play. 87 is obviously an interesting number for him, but as you go down, it's kind of like numbers are all relative here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you were going to do with him, but I chased him for 2 weeks and then gave up in the week he made the cut.
Yeah, and then he'll like finish top 10, and you just gotta line up the right week with him. But I think there's some real skill there, and it looks like he's trending towards playing more consistent golf, which is good to see.
You know, we said about, you know, with the back, like the first week back was the best time to use him, and at least it was in my opinion. But now that I'm thinking about it, maybe it was the worst time, because if he's trying to baby it, he's not going to be grinding until he's back on the actual course. And with all the COVID stuff, you didn't know exactly when that was going to be. Like, even though they had some dates, you know, it was hard to say with 100% certainty that you could say we're going to be there and be golfing with no shutdown. So he might have just taken it easy.
Yeah. So like, people kind of coming back into it here, it is, yeah, that's a good point.
But let's kick off the sevens with a Remington favorite, Brant Snedeker, 7,900. Seems to be a popular option. Is he a free square at 7,900? You know, he's so crash and burn these days, that worries me, but what are you thinking?
I guess just the term free square with anyone these days, and I guess in golf just in general, is a scary one. But I do like him a lot. It's a good course fit. He showed it here last year. He showed it at other Donald Ross courses in several years past, the Wyndham, which he notoriously plays very, very well at year in and year out. It's Donald Ross design. He had a couple good finishes in recent times. I don't think there's really much bad you can say about him. The price tag, actually, it's surprising given everything I just said, basically. I mean, 79 when we were just talking about JT Poston at 8,700 and Roy Sabatini at 8,800 and just some of these names up here. So, I mean, it's very good value. I do worry a little bit about the ownership too, but again, like I kind of don't care as much as maybe I would on some other weeks in terms of ownership, just after seeing like the bloodbath that DFS golf has been the past couple weeks. It's like, 6 of 6 is going to be 6 of 6 no matter what. And chances are one or two of those guys that you have in that six will be under 7% owned, which is really kind of like what you're going for there. So I like it. I like the play.
Agreed. Who else do you like here in the sevens?
This is where it's going to start kind of getting interesting here, and you're going to have to start picking your spots and kind of making some just bold moves here, set yourself apart. It might be easy to set yourself apart just by picking and choosing a few of these guys down here, but if you're going off recent form, there's Harold Varner has been playing very well, seems to be trending in the right direction, which I like to see. Brandon Todd, who we touched on very quickly. I don't know if I would go that route after the Sunday and just kind of everything in the last week. Yeah, Kevin Kisner is someone who I always am like tempted to go back to the well on. He's such a consistent player, and he did not look consistent over the past 3 weeks, but he I just like, I guess I have the faith in him that he will be a bounce back candidate here at a very good price.
Mm-hmm. Any interest in Maverick McNealy at 7,600? He's a young guy that can hit the ball a long way and can putt pretty decent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I won't say anything, I guess, negative about him. That's one of those plays where I'm happy if I see him there on Saturday and just hope he's going to do something with it. That's like a coin toss for me, which there are definitely quite a few down here that it's a coin toss and you're going to just kind of pray for those first 2 days and see what happens. Will Gordon, bursting onto tour.
Yeah.
Last week, very interesting, especially when you look at like Doc Redman of last year. Clearly, there are people here. You can find a rookie here that can probably be successful. That's interesting, but obviously the name is out there. People are thinking of him. Not a safe play, and if there's any ownership on him, I say no thanks. Brian Stewart. I don't know. This kind of follows the line of thinking of Snedeker, of a few of the names we just discussed, but he looks like he's trending in the right direction. Also played well here last year, so I like that. He can grind too. Like he's nobody's favorite play. He's not a cozy play ever, but he is definitely someone I would endorse this week.
Let's wrap the sevens with a, you know, we started with a REM favorite. Let's wrap it with a REM favorite. Mr. Keegan Bradley. This is exactly his kind of course. Just knock the crap out of the ball and then, you know, putt lights out. And he's only 7,300 in this field.
Yeah, Keegan, first of all, what a price for him. I love that. Second of all, he's probably going to shoot, like, he's going to be first round leader, like 9 under.
Yeah.
And then only God knows what will happen from there.
Right.
That is a very bold claim, I know. But, yeah, I mean, on price alone, I think he's a warranted play. And then there are more guys here, like Kyle Stanley, who looked great for quite some time last week. His ability to hit fairways is going to help him. He doesn't really have the distance, so you don't love that. But there are kind of some other Remington staples down here, as you'd say. Sebastian Muna. I can say this in my everyday life, and then I hop on a podcast, and I'm like, Sebastian Munoz, 7,100. He's still high on him. He's seemingly boom or bust week in and week out these days, but in a field like this, I'm a fan. I like it. That's a good play. And then you're probably going to find yourself in the $7,400 to $6,800 range looking for one to two guys, depending on where like the rest of your build is kind of focused at. Tyler Duncan is someone who I was on last week, which surprisingly, didn't end up hurting me too bad. That's an even 7,000. Anybody you like in like that range, the lower sevens that I didn't mention?
No, I think we covered it. Any punts you're looking for? I mean, it's a tough field to punt in, but you know, yeah, maybe like a Lanto Griffin.
I was gonna say Lanto Griffin. Man, I just like want to give the bold Henrik Norlander call one of these days, but he'll be around. We'll talk about him in a year or so. Like there are, if you look at this group down here, you got Sepp Straka, Aaron Wise, Matt Wallace, Luke List, Danny Willett, Jimmy Walker, all from 67 to 6,600. Those are all people that on any given week could be top 20. Or, you know, maybe even better than that. We have our defending champion, Nate Lashley, at 6,600. This is going to be a very, very difficult week to predict. But like we mentioned earlier, I'd say don't be afraid to leave some salary on the table if you're going to get creative. I guess don't let the numbers scare you away here, because it looks like DK pricing is as clueless as most people may be this week.
Then the last name down here that I've got any interest in, Wyndham Clark, another guy that's a big hitter. And he could do a little with the flat stick on the greens.
I like it.
All right, let's wrap things with some one and done talk as always. We've said it pretty much since the restart. Don't save your bullets for anything. If you've got a Bryson or a Webb, a Decky, just go ahead and use them. Patrick Reed, if you're saving him for anything, like this is probably the spot, unless you were trying to catch some Masters lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look at the field. You can choose any of those top 10 names, and you're probably going to feel pretty good about it. And if they're making the cut, they're probably with experience with everything, and it's not going to hurt you. Again, it's like I almost have anxiety when I think about what the cut line will be and like how much it's going to move. It's always interesting, and it's only going to be more interesting this week. So, I mean, yeah, that's not a bad play. Someone I actually like quite a bit is Victor Hovland. He's been super consistent. This might be a good time to play him, just given the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't feel like he's a bad option any week at this point.
Yeah, he's been – I followed him very closely last week, and it was just like – I think I had one matchup that I played him, and it was a roller coaster ride, but he just plays consistent good golf. He gets a bunch of birdies. His DraftKings scoring is good, but in terms of one and done, I see him making the cut, and I don't see him flopping on the weekend like some may.
Gotcha. All right, guys. Don't forget to check out the Fantasy Alarm PGA DFS playbook. Drew Phelps puts that together every week on Wednesday mornings. Great stuff in there. He's been on fire with that, picking winners and definite values all over the place. So give that a read for sure. For Rem, for myself, good luck, and may the sports be with you.